niña kwa saga linda Koshi ma bebe Kali tega la kimbe Kira yena kada she
on our team. You're too slow and fat.
This is weight bias.
Don't you care how you look?
Those with the serious disease called obesity face weight bias every day.
You're not the right fit for this job.
And blame themselves.
I wish I was different.
Weight bias hurts.
Let's stop weight bias. Be part of the solution.
Go to stopweightbias.com. A public service message from Obesity Action Coalition.
WRC
T Pittsburgh
88.3. We are scientists in our lab. The little glass eyes, they never lie. How can this fall my code? I've never seen anything like it before. This amoeba's got a mind of its own. But don't turn your back to stupid science world. This is reaching for the telephone.
I want to be stereotyped. I want to be classified. Classified.
Oh, Run, 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 run. don't know whether you health tip of the day from the African American Wellness Project. Asthma affects 25 million people nationwide, and every day 10 people die with it, with African American women and children being most at risk. Early warning signs include coughing, especially at night, or with exercise and wheezing. Almost all asthma can be effectively managed with a good action plan. So talk with your doctor today, and for more information, visit AAWellnessProject.org.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRC.
Mind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, Trump has declared that the U.S. is going to take over the Gaza Strip, that the Palestinians who live there will be permanently exiled. Again, asked whether Palestinians would have the right to return to Gaza under his scheme, Trump said no. But even those corporate news media who aren't actually endorsing this illegal, inhumane plan still can't seem to find it in themselves to call it what it is, ethnic cleansing. Media critic, activist, and teacher Gregory Shupak has been looking into big media's systematic refusal to use appropriate language about the human rights crimes unfolding before our eyes in Palestine. He teaches English and media studies at the University of Guelph-Humber in Toronto, and he's author of the book The Wrong Story, Palestine, Israel, and the Media. Also on the show, there is a deep, if muddled, sense that the U.S. tax system is unfair. The little guy pays too much, and rich folks find loopholes and offshore accounts. But then on a different page, there's a story about how we, as a country, don't have enough resources to allow school kids to eat lunch, because that would mean the dreaded higher taxes. But we will shell out another billion for a fighter plane and shut up about that. Media outlets that fail to make meaningful connections between those clever offshore accounts and the supposed inability to fund school lunch are certainly not the ones to look to for an understanding of the racial impacts of supposedly neutral tax policy and practices, however demonstrable those impacts may be. We'll talk about that with Portia Allen Kyle, interim executive director at Color of Change and author of their report, Praying Preparers. That's coming up this week on Counterspin, and we're going to get right to it. Counterspin is brought to you each week by the Media Watch Group Fair. A couple months ago, when a Los Angeles police officer killed a child in a department store, the New York Times ran the story with the headline, quote, "Stray bullet kills girl as officers fire at suspect in Los Angeles store," close quote. A later headline from the Times referred to the, quote, "officer whose bullet killed a 14-year-old girl," close quote. That used to be thought of as just newspaper speak, but we can now recognize how that distorted, passive voice language is a choice that obscures agency and undermines accountability. It's not just words. We see that obscuring of agency and undermining of accountability writ larger when crimes are committed by governments, corporate media favor, against populations they don't care much about. Here, journalistic language takes on another level of import because calling those crimes by their name brings on particular legal and political responses New research from our guest explores that question in Gaza and the West Bank. Gregory Shupak is a media critic and activist. He teaches English and media studies at the University of Guelph Humber in Toronto, and he's author of the book The Wrong Story, Palestine, Israel, and the Media from OR Books. He joins us now by phone from Toronto. Welcome back to Counterspin, Gregory Shupak.
Hi, how are you?
Well, I'm okay. When Trump declared his plans for Gaza, quote, "You're talking about 1.5 million people and we just clean out that whole thing," close quote. And then later he declared that the U.S. would take over the Gaza Strip and own it. If you still have an outrage bone in your body, you may have thought, surely this will be seen as the wildly illegal, immoral move that it is. How can it be resisted? Who can counter it? What bodies do we have to protect Palestinians in the face of this? All of those would be questions for journalists to pursue. But you can't challenge something that you won't name, which brings us to the research that you've just been working on. Tell us about that.
Sure. So this plan that Trump has put forth and stuck to for quite some time, I thought perhaps it would just be one of his many deranged statements that is later walked back by, if not him, then others in his administration, but he keeps pressing on this. Yeah, it was widely described as ethnic cleansing by people who are in position to make that assessment. So people like Antonio Guterres of the United Nations, their Secretary General, in fact, or Navi Pillay, who is another UN official, focusing on Palestine. This plan that Trump put forth was denounced by them and by others, like Human Rights Watch, as ethnic cleansing. And yet that term has seldom found its way into the coverage. I looked at coverage of the first just over a week since Trump's racist fever dream, and I found that 87% of the articles in the Times, New York Times, that is, Wall Street Journal and Washington Post, did not include the term ethnic cleansing. And in fact, only 26% of the coverage included a term like ethnic cleansing or something similar that captures the violence of what he is proposing. So terms like forced displacement or expel or expulsion or forced transfer. So just automatically you have a whitewashing of what he's proposing to do, even in coverage that is critical of it. And that's really leaving audiences who may be not terribly well-versed in international law not in a very strong position to understand just how egregious of a crime it is that Trump is advocating.
Well, and ethnic cleansing is almost like it's just a pejorative, as though it had no actual meaning. In fact, I think it was the Wall Street Journal you found put it in sort of scare quotes, like it's an accusation and not a phenomenon.
Exactly. And I talk in my piece about Bret Stephens and a couple of Wall Street Journal pieces that endorsed Trump's plan. And however, I didn't mention that Stephens had a second piece that sort of addressed Trump's plan in passing. And he blatantly lied and said that Trump's plan does not involve forcing Palestinians to leave Gaza, but Trump has been quite clear that that's exactly what he has in mind. So not only do we have a widespread failure to properly name this plan for ethnic cleansing, we also have quite a few cases of endorsements of what Trump is calling for.
We know that for many U.S. media, and you illustrated it, the U.S. exceptionalism, just the idea that, oh, sure, we can do this anywhere in the world, extends to the point where they don't even really acknowledge international law. And this is a longstanding problem where the U.N. is just kind of meddling in U.S. power and that sort of thing. But it really comes to the point where they don't even invoke the idea that there is something called international law.
Yeah, that's quite important. Only 19% of the coverage of Trump's proposal for Gaza, if you can even call it that, only 19% include the term international law, which is really a key paradigm through which this and any kind of international armed conflict needs to be understood. Mm-hmm. But it's just not even being presented to the audience as something that they need to think about. And it puts me in mind of Richard Falk and Howard Friel wrote a book 20 years ago or so called The Record of the Paper, and it talked about how in coverage of the run-up to the invasion of Iraq, international law was totally absent from New York Times editorials that were in various ways endorsing or at least giving credibility to the concept of the attack. And so we still see the same pattern with regard to Gaza, as well as the West Bank, where patterns of ethnic cleansing are also unfolding.
And yet we know they will invoke international law when it suits, when it seems like something that bolsters the U.S. case. Well, you found, finally, similar issues with coverage of the West Bank. And I think it's important for folks to understand this is not just a story of Gaza anymore, obviously. This is an expansive story. And when we talk about the West Bank, here, as is often the case, you can find an example of an outlet or a journalist who is doing straightforward, informative witnessing, and you can actually use that to contrast with what many powerful, better resourced outlets are doing. And that's the case in coverage of the West Bank, right? It's not that everyone is refusing to witness or acknowledge.
No, I think that one of the main problems I see in the way that the events unfolding in the West Bank are being portrayed is that there's a refusal, you might call it, to connect how each individual in scare quotes, how each individual event or incident connects to others. Mm-hmm. So you'll have reports that'll say Israeli invasion of Jenin refugee camp that has unfolded in recent weeks has largely emptied out the entire area. But the coverage of that fails to situate that in relation to the fact that we're seeing similar types of violence unfolding in other parts of the West Bank that Israel is attacking, particularly the northern West Bank, and that these are part of a longer-term trend towards, as several observers that I cite in the article have pointed out, of ethnic cleansing the territory. So, for example, I talk about how in October of last year, the UN Special Rapporteur Francesca Albanese put forth a report in which she describes escalated patterns of ethnic cleansing in the West Bank, including East Jerusalem. And she talks about how since October 7th, 2023, at least 18 West Bank communities have been depopulated under the threat of force. So what she and others have observed is that this is not a matter of, okay, there's a couple days of fighting and people go back to their homes when it's safe.
Right.
It's part of a longer-term trajectory whereby it's becoming difficult and often impossible for people in West Bank towns to go back to their homes once Israel drives them out. So not at all unlike what we have seen in Gaza.
But the refusal to connect those dots and to make it seem as though, oh, a skirmish happened over here today, and oh, a skirmish happened over there yesterday, and not telling the bigger story is the failure.
Exactly. And as is so often the case with coverage of Palestine and other issues as well, but we get a muddying of the agency of the perpetrators of the violence, right? Like everything's reduced to just cash clashes and conflict rather than efforts to enforce colonial subjugation and resistance to that. So that kind of power dynamic is completely glossed over when you get this anodyne language about just conflicts and clashes. There's no space within that language for communicating that what we're talking about is driving out the indigenous population so that settlers can take over their land.
We've been speaking with Gregory Shupak. He's a media critic, activist, and teacher. His book, The Wrong Story, Palestine, Israel, and the Media, is available from OR Books. And his research on media afraid to call ethnic cleansing by its name can be found on fair.org. Gregory Shupak, thank you so much for joining us this week on Counterspin.
Thanks for having me.
April is nominally tax season, but right about now is when many people start worrying about it. That's why TurboTax paid a heck of a lot of money for Super Bowl ads to hard sell the idea that people could use its service for free if they hadn't used it last year or if they filed by a certain date. But if free, easy tax filing is possible, should it be a gift to taxpayers from a for-profit corporation? from a corporation that has already been fined for unfairly charging lower-income Americans, from a corporation that has aggressively lobbied for decades to prevent making tax filing free and/or easy. Our next guest has looked into not just the top-down inequities of the tax preparation industry, described by one observer as the Wild Wild West, but how those problems fall hard on Black and brown and low-income communities. Portia Allen Kyle is Interim Executive Director at Color of Change. She joins us now by phone. Welcome to Counterspin, Portia Allen Kyle.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
Well, I want to ask you about the report you authored called Praying Preparers. I believe that many, if not enough, people have a sense that poor, low-income folks are at the sharp end of tax policy generally and tax filing specifically, that rich people get to keep not just more money, but a higher fraction of money than low-income folks who have less money and who need every nickel of it. But I'm not sure that people understand that isn't just the capitalism chips falling where they may. Your report says, quote, exploiting low-income taxpayers is core to the business model of tax prep companies, close quote. Tell us what we might not know about that.
Doing that report was so eye-opening for so many different reasons, and both personally and professionally in a Color of Change and our advocacy. I remember years ago when I discovered after going to H&R Block and paying more than $300 for a fairly simple return and finding out that the person who filed my return wasn't even an accountant. And I remember how ripped off I felt. So fast forward, being in this role and doing this work and this report in particular, just going into how much of a scam the tax preparation industry, both the storefront tax prep companies, so your H&R Block, your Liberty Tax, your Jackson Hewitt of the world, as well as large corporations such as Intuit and other software providers that provide these tax filing services. And the reality of the situation is that you have an industry that has spent hundreds of millions of dollars preventing people from being able to either pay the government what they owe or in many cases receive money back from the government that is technically already theirs. They have earned it. The government has kept more of it than they were perhaps entitled to. And now people are in the position for a refund. And these businesses, especially for Black taxpayers, for low-income taxpayers, have found ways to profit off of people's already earned money by inserting themselves as these corporate middlemen in the tax preparation game, where their sole role is to fleece people's pockets, either from the money that folks have already earned and they are due as a refund, or by upcharging, upselling, and preying upon folks who are eligible for certain tax credits, such as the earned income tax credit or the child tax credit, and have made businesses off of selling the equivalent of payday loan products to these taxpayers, where they take a part of their refund and just give people the rest under the guise of giving them a same-day advance or a same-day loan. And so no matter what the angle is, it is all unnecessary and all a scam, and it's why government products like IRS Direct File are so important to both our democracy, how government works, and how people receive and keep their money.
A key fact in your report is that the tax preparation industry has these basic competency problems. Tax laws change all the time. You're looking for someone who can make sure you pay what you're supposed to and look for any benefits you're entitled to. And of course, throughout this is that the most vulnerable people are the most in need of this help. But an unacceptable number, if we could say, of these tax preparers are not required to really prove that they know how to do it. That's an industry-wide failing.
Oh, absolutely. There are no real requirements for tax preparers in these companies. Whereas if you go to an accountant, Accountants have professional standards. They have training requirements. Anybody can hang up a shingle and say, I am an accountant, in the same way that anyone can walk into a hospital, put on a white coat and say, I am a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
But what we have is an entire industry of people that are able to say, I am a tax preparer because I have applied for a job, maybe taken an internal training to these companies, and are now in the business of selling tax preparation.
Right. But not to everyone, because let's underscore that. The fact that these systemic problems, this is a regulatory problem, clearly, but it doesn't land on everyone equally, and it's not designed to. And so in this case, you see that these unregulated tax preparers are taking advantage of, well, the people that it's easiest to take advantage of. Talk a little bit more about the impacts of that particular kind of predation.
One of the ways in which especially storefront preparers are able to prey on communities is simply by location. And so many of these like franchised operations, some of them maintain year-long locations, many of them do not, but they pop up kind of like Spirit Halloween, like often around tax season,
right,
in neighborhoods that are disproportionately Black or communities of color, disproportionately lower income, disproportionately have taxpayers and residents who are eligible for what are expected to be larger refunds. So those who are eligible for the earned income tax credit, those who are eligible for the child tax credit, and really prey upon those folks in selling tax preparation services. And the key here is selling tax preparation services, because what they really are salespeople. They have sales goals. It's why they are incentivized to upsell products. Some of the products that they are also selling are refund anticipation loans. So they may lure you in and say, get a portion of your refund today,
mm-hmm.
or get an advance up front. That's an unregulated bank product. So you have a unregulated tax preparer
mm-hmm.
now selling you an unregulated bank product, loan product, that often sometimes reach interest rates of over 30%. And they know what they're doing because that is where they make their money, in the selling of product.
Right.
And we see that in the data that free programs such as VITA, the Volunteer Income Tax Assistance Program, disproportionately prepares the taxes of filers who don't have children and aren't eligible for EITC. So many of these companies will refer out other folks for whom they find that it is not worth it to prepare their taxes, prey on folks that they think are getting big refunds. But more importantly, what really illustrates the difference in tax preparation and expectations, the wealthy millionaires, billionaires, corporations, they're not going to H&R Block. Like,
right.
Mark Cuban is not walking into H&R Block to file his taxes,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, folks on the other end of the income and wealth spectrum are relying on accountants, are relying on folks who are not just preparing a service in the moment, but who are providing year-round advice on how to make the system work for them. And so there's a service and an additional amount of financial insight and oversight that they are getting that an entire segment of the market is not, when tax prep is handled in this way. Because at the end of the day, it's these tax lobbying, these corporations that have fought so hard to keep taxes complicated and confusing for the rest of us.
Right.
Doing this while providing services that they know are subpar in quality and deliver questionable outcomes. I mean, demonstrated in the report, the error rate of those who prepare taxes for companies like H&R Block, Liberty Tax, Jackson Hewitt, and other companies is extremely high, sometimes upwards of 60%. So you have a scenario where you have a portion of taxpayers who disproportionately have their returns prepared by preparers who are unqualified and unregulated, and essentially increases their risk of an audit.
Right.
And then when they are audited, it's found that the IRS disproportionately has audited Black taxpayers, and particularly those who are eligible for EITC, et cetera. And that is not unrelated to the way that it is structured and the predation of the corporate tax lobby in the first place. And while it sounds like when you see advertisements from H&R Block or Intuit about how they stand by and guarantee their services, they'll defend you in an audit, Well, they need to defend you in an audit. It's not altruistic. You'll need that protection because they're going to mess it up and have messed it up for so many people. And that part of the story is not often talked about when we talk about the disproportionate audit rate. It often is not always included how those folks had their returns prepared. And that's often by these same companies that are presenting and fighting against things like direct file, which is essentially the public option for taxes in the same way that the Affordable Care Act and Thing to Any Exchange is the public option for health care.
What is direct file, and why can we expect to hear in the media a lot of folks saying, oh, well, you might think direct file is good, but actually, you know, what should we know about it?
Well, what we should know about it is, as I mentioned, direct file is the public option for taxes.
Right.
And it's important because it allows people to file returns and simple returns directly with the IRS. So last year, the pilot program was only available in 12 states. This year, the program is open to folks living in 25 states. We hope to see and are fighting for the expansion after this season into all 50 states and recognize the tough road ahead for that. But it is a program that in its first year saved over, I believe it was 130,000 taxpayers, millions of dollars and hundreds of thousands of hours in tax preparation. And already we've seen folks block the season to the direct file system. And in the first 2 weeks, Color of Change has been doing a lot of advocacy. We are the top referrer of traffic to direct file. And so we're already saving hundreds of thousands of dollars and thousands of hours, which is a real benefit to communities. This is a system that's like in government working for you. It is also important because the other thing that private companies have really invested in and fought so hard about is that even when you file with H&R Block, when you file with Intuit or TurboTax, like when you file with LibertyTax, that information is still going to the government, to the IRS. But now it also is housed in this private corporation that essentially uses it as a part of their business model to sell other products to you and prey on you in other ways. And so it's not a coincidence that a company like Intuit own TurboTax, which is, you know, a software platform that will take up your data. They also own QuickBooks, so they have a bunch of data on small businesses that keep their accounting in that way. They own MailChimp, and so they have information of millions of folks who join direct marketing email campaigns, and so they can link data in that way. And then also own Credit Karma. And so for those who are looking to improve their credit scores, for example, and they also then have information about, you know, Americans in that level and match this to essentially prey in different ways with different types of tax products and other banking products. And we've seen this in the expansion of fintech tax product loans that has been going crazy. Right. You know, when Cash App, for example, is telling you that you can file your taxes for free, you should assume that you are the product.
Mm-hmm.
And cutting out that corporate middleman is critical and essential for not just ensuring that families keep money in their pocket, save time that they are able to put back, spend with their kids, spend with their families, spend pursuing other things, but also is a data protection strategy as well.
We've been speaking with Portia Allen Kyle, Interim Executive Director at Color of Change. The report, Praying Preparers, How Storefront Tax Preparation Companies Target Low-Income Black and Brown Communities, can be found at colorofchange.org. Portia Allen Kyle, thank you so much for joining us this week on Counterspin.
Thanks for having me.
And that's it for Counterspin for this week. Counterspin is produced by FAIR, the National Media Watch Group based in New York. The show is engineered by Riley Baer. I'm Janine Jackson. Thanks for listening to Counterspin. Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, A number of federal agencies rushed to make clear they would be scrubbing activities and events that celebrate cultural awareness in an effort to stay on the good side of the weird new White House. Trump and his abettors' anti-discrimination agenda is as subtle as a sledgehammer. DEI hire, for instance, is super complicated code for the idea that if a person who isn't white, cis, and male got a job, that can only mean a better qualified white cis man was unfairly denied it. That's just, Trump says, common sense. The irony is not lost that history itself is seen as being manipulated for political purpose when it comes to Black History Month, because we know that history is constantly invoked, if implicitly, as a way of justifying present-day inequity. White supremacy can be presented as natural if white people invented everything, discovered everything, created all the wealth, and defined civilization. And that lies in back of many public and media conversations. So just saying, Charles Drew.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
So by asking the question, tell us what you did this week, what he's doing is saying, are you actually working? And then if you don't answer, like, you're sort of semi-fired or you're fired, because a lot of people are not answering because they don't even exist.
Despite President Trump calling Elon Musk's demands of the federal workforce a pretty ingenious idea, resistance is mounting to Musk's threats, and reporters are disputing the cost-cutting claims of his so-called Department of Government Efficiency. We'll speak with a federal worker with the Department of Veterans Affairs, where more than 1,000 nurses, doctors, and other workers have already been cut. And with Stephen Engelberg, editor-in-chief of ProPublica, who writes, the Trump administration keeps citing an untrue stat as it targets federal workers. Then as Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth heads to Guantanamo amidst growing concern over sending migrants there, we'll look at the private company running its detention center there, which has a history of abuse.
Last year, the Biden administration gave a $163.4 million contract to Acoma Infrastructure Protection, a private contractor, to run the Guantanamo Migrant Detention Center. And what I discovered is that this company has also been criticized for its treatment of migrants at the other immigration jails that it runs throughout the country.
Finally, the nonprofit Dawn is filing a complaint with the International Criminal Court.
Joe Biden, Anthony Blinken, and Lloyd Austin are complicit in Israel's crimes. These officials were aware of the crimes that Israel was committing, and yet they ensured that American political support kept coming.
We'll speak to Dawn board member and veteran war crimes prosecutor Reed Brody. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The United States broke from its European allies Monday, voting against United Nations resolutions calling for Russia to be held accountable on the third anniversary of its invasion of Ukraine. At the UN General Assembly, the Trump administration's envoys voted against a resolution calling for de-escalation in Ukraine and a comprehensive, just, and lasting peace. Separately, the UN Security Council adopted a U.S.-drafted resolution Monday titled The Path to Peace that does not blame Russia for invading Ukraine. UN Undersecretary General Rosemary DiCarlo spoke to the council ahead of Monday's vote.
3 years ago today, the world watched in shock as the Russian Federation launched its full-scale invasion of Ukraine, a clear violation of the UN Charter and international law. This act undermined the very foundations of the international order.
President Trump welcomed French President Emmanuel Macron to the White House Monday for talks on Ukraine, NATO, and trade. After the talks, Macron said Ukraine must be at the table for any negotiations over its future, that any peace agreement should allow for Ukrainian sovereignty, and that peace, quote, must not mean a surrender of Ukraine, unquote. Health officials in Gaza say at least three children froze to death overnight as hundreds of thousands of Palestinians are forced to live in tents and other makeshift shelters in the freezing cold. Palestinians say Israel continues to violate part of the ceasefire agreement requiring it to supply Gaza with mobile homes and safer shelters. On Monday, the man who's poised to become Germany's next chancellor, Friedrich Merz, said he hoped to soon welcome Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to Germany, despite an arrest warrant issued against him by the International Criminal Court. His offer came as the U.S.-based non